Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In December, I agreed to extend the tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans because it was the only way I could prevent a tax hike on middle-class Americans. But we cannot afford $1 trillion worth of tax cuts for every millionaire and billionaire in our society. We can't afford it. And I refuse to renew them again.
He refuses. You don't hear that word a lot from President Obama. Now on to the politics of the speech and deficit reduction plan versus the Ryan plan. This already looks like the basic outline of the 2012 elections. And the president did something else that Republicans are better known for doing explicitly, calling his approach the patriotic one.
This sense of responsibility to each other and to our country. This isn't a partisan feeling. This isn't a Democratic or a Republican idea. It's patriotism.
So that's how he framed the tax hikes on the rich as part of the big deficit reduction plan. And one more clip, kind of the opposite number of that, before we talk to Jonathan Alter and take your questions and comments about the politics of deficit reduction. This is the minute and a half political heart of the speech. This is the one you've probably heard excerpted elsewhere. We've tried to take a lot of the other economics parts that haven't gotten as much headline play and play them earlier. But this is the full version of the minute and a half political heart of the speech, Obama on the attack against the Ryan plan and Republican values.
This is a vision that says even though Americans can't afford to invest in education at current levels or clean energy, even though we can't afford to maintain our commitment on Medicare and Medicaid, we can somehow afford more than $1 trillion in new tax breaks for the wealthy. Think about that. In the last decade, the average income of the bottom 90% of all working Americans actually declined. Meanwhile, the top 1% saw their income rise by an average of more than a quarter of $1 million each. That's who needs to pay less taxes? They want to give people like me a $200,000 tax cut that's paid for by asking 33 seniors each to pay $6,000 more in health costs. That's not right. That's not going to happen as long as I'm president.
And to his audience at George Washington University, that was the only time in the 45-minute speech that he drew a round of applause. With me now, Jonathan Alter, MSNBC analyst and author of The Promise, President Obama Year One, a New York Times bestseller now out in paperback with an epilogue covering 2010. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Brian.
I think you've been rooting for the president to come out swinging more. Did you like this speech?
I did. I thought it laid out the contours of the 2012 campaign in very clear terms. I think that terrain, or to mix a metaphor, that frame on the election will work to the advantage of Democrats, and that the Republicans are making a serious political mistake by moving toward approval of the Ryan plan in the House, which should happen within the next several days or weeks. You have to understand a little bit of the background here that I think has been missed politically. The 2010 midterm elections occasioned a lot of commentary, but much of that commentary missed the core of why the Republicans took control of the House of Representatives. The main message that they used in their attack ads all over the United States was, Obamacare will cut $500 billion from Medicare. Now, in midterm elections, elderly people vote disproportionately. College students have to, wash their hair or go to the gym or something. They find some excuse not to vote in midterms. It's seniors who go and vote. And the Republicans very successfully frightened seniors particularly seniors who are independents, into voting Republican because they convinced them that Obamacare was going to meddle with their Medicare. Medicare is a wildly popular program. So now, just a few months after that election, you have the entire Republican Party, which is about to vote to end Medicare as we know it, as the president said. And that is not demagoguery. That's not some sort of a twisting of the Ryan plan. That's what the Ryan plan does. It ends Medicare. And that is a very poor platform for the Republicans to use in 2012.
So politically, what's the game plan on the part of President Obama? Because the weakness of this may be, you know, I'm thinking of the Mondale campaign in 1984, where Mondale said, if I'm elected president, I'll raise your taxes because the economy demands it. If Reagan is elected president, he'll raise your taxes too. The difference is, I'll tell you, and he won't. And we know how that election turned out.
But Mondale did not draw a distinction between the wealthy and everybody. And Obama, perhaps irresponsibly, is not saying that he's going to raise taxes on the middle class. He really can't meet his deficit reduction targets without doing that eventually, but he's smart enough not to do that before the election. So instead, he is making it about more tax cuts for the wealthy, which pull very badly. So if the Republicans want to, you know, plant their standard on that ground, good luck to them. I don't think it's going to work.
Well, here's some of the response from Congressman Ryan yesterday after being taken to the woodshed like that by the president.
What we got was a speech that was excessively partisan, dramatically inaccurate, and hopelessly inadequate to addressing our country's pressing fiscal challenges.
So, Jonathan Alter, is the president talking simultaneously about how he wants everyone to work together and get past partisanship, and at the same time that his vision is the patriotic one and the Republican one is un-American?
Well, you know, he is. It is a nice twist, as you say, that for a Democrat to try to wrap themselves in the flag. As far as what Paul Ryan said, you know, he was right on 2 out of 3. It was a very partisan political speech. I think a lot of Democrats would go, it's about time. And Ryan is also right that the president's speech was hopelessly inadequate when it came to actually addressing the crushing deficits that we're facing. But so was Ryan's plan, because both of them cut $4 trillion over a decade. And although that sounds like a lot of money, it doesn't really address the problem. It's not enough. So they're in exactly the same place in terms of how many, you know, how deeply they have to cut. Where Ryan was wrong was in saying that the president was inaccurate. I don't think there was anything he said in that speech that was not accurate as a factual matter. Where the inaccuracies come is in the Republican reply that somehow, Americans are laboring under a greater tax burden than our competitors internationally, which is simply not true. And to the extent that it applies as far as the corporate tax goes, the president indicated that he would be amenable to lowering that tax to encourage business development. So, you know, in the past, Democrats, including Walter Mondale, did demagogue on Medicare and Social Security. They were saying that the Republicans were going to end these programs when they weren't. Reagan strengthened Social Security after coordinating with Tip O'Neill. But now, the Republicans have become so radicalized that they actually do want to repeal the social contract of the 20th century. So that's what this next election is going to be about, these gains that were made in the 20th century, and whether we want to continue with the deal that we make to each other as a people. And I think it's in that sense going to be a fascinating election because it really is a referendum on something important.
Jonathan Alter with us on WNYC as we talk about the politics now of the Obama speech yesterday and the Democrats versus Republicans on deficit reduction. And we'll add your calls, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your comment or question to our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And since, Jonathan, you lean a little toward the president's side of this, let's put a couple of the conservative callers coming in on the air with you. First, Phil in Queens. Hi, Phil. You're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Happy Passover.
You
and,
too.
And to Mr. Alter, too, if he's celebrating.
I am.
I think the guest has miscategorized the Republican position. People want small government. It may impact Medicare. It may not. They want to get rid of certain agencies. They want to, like HUD and EPA and education. These are things that can be done and should be done at the state. There's a very large and vast academic body through conservative think tanks like the Heritage Foundations. Brian, I pray that you become the fair person you used to be, and instead of having...
Wait a minute, we just had Heritage on last week.
Well, I'm sorry I missed it. I'm not always in the region.
On this, as a matter of fact. But
you know,
go ahead.
You used to have one guy who was liberal,
Phil,
one guy who was conservative.
We still do that all the time, and right now we have Jonathan Alter, so stay on point, okay?
My point is I believe that Mr. Alter has miscategorized what happened in 2010. People saw the expansion of Obamacare. They saw the stimulus money being wasted. They saw a 10% unemployment rate, with the real rate being 17 or 18%, and they were sick and tired. And even to categorize the Republican plan as the plan, we're working out, you know, both sides are working out plans. It's good that President Obama came up with a plan to have a focal point, so now we can call him on specifics, though I doubt he will be very forthcoming with specifics.
And Phil, I'm going to leave it there. So, Jonathan, the heart of the content of Phil's call is that the president doesn't deal with economic growth, and that the higher tax rates may play to a sense of fairness, but they will slow down economic growth, which is another thing that the country desperately needs.
Well, first of all, I agree with the caller about some of the reasons why the 2010 midterms went the way they did. When I was stressing the pandering to the elderly by the Republicans on Medicare, I was only saying that was a part of the way they got the House back. There also was, you know, on the part of the Republican base, which turned out in force, a lot of unhappiness about the health care plan and the stimulus and the rest. So he's quite right about that. When he said, you know, that if we simply, you know, cut HUD and education and that kind of thing and turn it over to the states, that will take care of our deficit problem, that just doesn't add up mathematically. So that, you know, there are... you have to raise revenue as well as cut spending. And even Tom Coburn, an extremely conservative Republican on the Deficit Reduction Committee Commission, acknowledges that. And you know, I spoke the other day to David Stockman, who was Ronald Reagan's budget director, and he thinks both parties are inadequate to the challenge of really getting a hold of our fiscal future. But he was especially withering about the Republicans and the idea of them cutting taxes at this point, as if that is somehow economically necessary, or as if somehow, you know, that revenue is going to somehow magically appear, that $1 trillion in lost revenue by reducing taxes to 25%. You know, when
but it's the vision. I have to interrupt because our time is running short.
Yeah.
But it's you know, it is as Phil says, and I think as you have said, it's the competing visions of larger versus smaller governments. It's not that the Ryan plan really claims that the magic hand of the marketplace will create more government revenue through the tax reductions. It's that he says we would be a better country because of more growth in the private sector if we had the smaller taxes.
Well, you know, in certain limited targeted ways, I actually agree with the caller that there, and the president does too, that there are certain targeted business, you know, tax credits and investment ways of stimulating investment through the tax code that I doubt they'll mess with, and the president actually wants to lower the corporate tax. So there are some areas where there's an argument to be made for doing this, but we're talking now about trillions of dollars of transferring that from, you know, dealing with our people. The elderly person who wants to be in a nursing home instead of in a spare bedroom of their kid, you know. These are human needs that, as a society, we've always decided were important.
Let me go on to one more caller.
It's really going back to the 1920s, before the New Deal and a lot of these social contracts that we developed.
All right. And as I said, because you're leaning that way, we're going to take some conservative callers for you. And Mike in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Brian. You know, I'm kind of inclined to think that we're sort of at the Hans Christian Andersen moment in this whole political debate. And the question, what I mean by that is, when is somebody going to say that the emperor has no clothes? Quite honestly, I didn't vote for President Obama in the election. I've never really been a big supporter of his. But I just can't believe what he says anymore. I mean, he's telling us about how he's serious about budgets, okay? But the fact is that he's really punted everything, including his guaranteed we're going to reduce the deficit if this plan doesn't work, till after the second set of midterm elections at the end of his administration. He just introduced a huge budget. I mean, the TARP bill was about $800 billion, okay? But all these subsequent gigantic deficits are his. He authored them, okay? There's no evidence that this gentleman has any interest in reducing the size of government and getting any of this spending under control, at least judging by his actions. So why should we really believe anything he has to say?
Mike, thank you. And he's talking about President Obama, not you, Jonathan.
he could as easily be talking about me.
Maybe.
Look, we have to, you know, we have to deal in the realm of facts here. And as Ronald Reagan said, facts can be stubborn things. Maybe that was Mondale to Reagan. But when Bill Clinton left office, we had a surplus of a couple hundred billion dollars. When George W. Bush, who was, to refer to the caller's point, the author of the TARP plan, left office, we had a deficit of $1.2 trillion. So the idea that Barack Obama created this deficit somehow is just spin of the worst kind. Did he add to it because they had to rescue the economy, rescue the banks, and so forth? Yes. Can reasonable people disagree, about health care and the rest? Sure. But this problem was developed over the last 10 years. Has he been specific enough about the way he will get us out of it? No. And I think that's a legitimate criticism of the speech and why it was, as charged, a political speech. But that's what the next election is going to be about, is will we make adjustments in Medicare so that the wealthy elderly pay more, which will be necessary to get control of our fiscal problems, or will we end Medicare? That's going to be the big choice in the next election.
So last thing in our last minute, political question. In the speech, the president announced that Vice President Biden will lead a bipartisan team from Congress, 4 Democrats and 4 Republicans covering the House and Senate, to try and hash out a compromise 10-year deficit reduction plan by June, or at least a 2012 budget with these assumptions. Did he poison the well with his tone, or is it all just too politically fraught anyway,
In
a way that makes an agreement almost impossible?
Yes, that's just window dressing.
And we have 30 seconds.
That part of the speech was not significant because they're not going to come to some 10-year agreement in June. What they may do is come to agreement about what they call the fail-safe mechanism that puts the teeth into the budget cuts down the road. They used that in the 1990s to great effect, and if I think both parties could agree that these provisions need more teeth, and by agreeing to that, that they would be automatically enacted if Congress doesn't act, that might get them through the debt ceiling crisis that's facing us this spring, and it might be grounds for at least minimal compromise with a lot of use of the word trillions without any reference to the specifics.
Jonathan Alter, MSNBC analyst and author of The Promise, President Obama Year One, a New York Times bestseller now out in paperback with an epilogue covering 2010. Jonathan, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
And listeners, we have some very good articles about the competing plans on our politics website. It's freecountry.org, including The 5 Things We Learned from Obama's Speech by reporter Anna Sale, politically diverse commentary, and an explainer called What's a Debt Trigger Anyway? All on our politics website. It's a free country.org. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.